How would you like to navigate menopause naturally? Dr. Blake Myers will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Dr. Blake is he is a licensed naturopathic physician and assistant professor in integrative and functional nutrition at Saybrook University. Dr. Blake, tell us about menopause and why do women need a systematic approach to support their menopausal transition?
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.
Yeah, well, I guess I think it's important for me to first start out and like, okay, like most people in the menopause space, especially online and influencers, are female, right? I mean, there's male OBGYNs out there for sure, but you know, I'm a little unique in that way. And so I think it's important to just say, like, how I got here and why it's important to me. So just like in a nutshell, you know, I started practicing in 2014 and I never, you know, I really just opened up my practice and, you know, saw people of all ages, genders, you know, just primary care, chronic illness, whoever wanted to see me. But really women are who just started showing up and have consistently shown up in my practice. And it's usually women between the ages of 35 and 65. So naturally, just over the course of my career, I really had to understand what's happening during the midlife transition with perimenopause and menopause, and how do we support women to move into the next phase of their life in the healthiest way possible and decrease risk factors and help the transition from premenopause to postmenopause go more smoothly. And I've become passionate about helping women during that time of life. There's a lot of a lack of information. Sometimes there's disinformation. And my approach to this is to first let women know that there's a lot more than hormones that are going on. That's the conversation that's usually happening is your estrogen's going down. Sometimes practitioners who are in the space more will talk about your estrogen and your progesterone is declining and testosterone can too, and that's true, but there's a lot more that's going on. So I kind of put together a more of a systematic approach that addresses some of the other things that are happening. So the digestive system takes it, really the whole microbiome shifts during the perimenopause and menopausal transition. It's a completely different ecosystem in there. And so a lot of digestive system symptoms can happen, but also you could be more prone to leaky gut, which creates inflammation and so on. Inflammation goes up during this time. So we have to think about that. We have to think about metabolism and the way that the cells are making energy. So there's just a lot to think about. So my approach is, I'm kind of left your question. I wanted to give the background, but your question was, will you remind me again?
I can't remember what I actually asked.
I think you asked me about the approach, but I just wanted to make sure that it was sort of like, hey, here's how I am, who I am, why I got here. So my approach is one that tries to take into account hormones, but not just hormones, and what's happening physiologically all throughout a woman's body during this time. So the dietary approach that I have is one that has a few phases to it. So usually I like women to start out with a diet that's slightly more restrictive. I really don't lean into restriction much, but I take out, you know, I have women take out, of course, like sugar and some of the obvious things, processed foods that you would expect in any healthy diet to sort of not be there or not be there much. So I have women remove those things, but also have them remove grains for a while. This is just 3 weeks, so it's temporary, but we remove grains and that helps get rid of some that, you know, residual things like pastas or things that might cause swings in blood sugar and impact metabolism. So we get those things out, and really fruit is pretty much out except for berries and citrus in moderation. So for a few weeks, I have women do that. And then we really, that's to sort of reset everything. And then we really start to add in more foods with the goal of building a robust diet that's plant forward. So sometimes I'll say plant-based, but people think I mean vegetarian. I don't necessarily mean that, but plant forward, like the majority of your plate should be vegetables, right? And incorporating phytoestrogenic foods, which we can talk about more. And then, you know, I work in some other dietary aspects like intermittent fasting. We address sleep, stress management, which is huge, movement, and then smart supplementation. There's ways to use herbs and nutrients that really help to balance some of the different body systems that are changing during this time.
Thank you. Tell us about the kind of systems that a menopausal, a perimenopausal woman could experience. Like, I'm 44 now, and I think that qualifies me as perimenopausal. And what I've noticed is that I am a lot more forgetful. Like, for example, earlier you asked me, okay, what question did you ask me? I forgot, you know? So I find that I am a lot more forgetful. The other thing I noticed is that my hair has fallen quite a lot, and that's why, besides having a really bad haircut in September last year, regularly have big clumps of hair, like, just fall. And I was diagnosed with leaky gut. And what else have I noticed? Nothing else for them. Oh, yes, I have noticed something else, which was that a drop of a libido of 99%. I'm at 1% of what it used to be.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So
tell us more about other symptoms that perimenopausal and menopausal experience.
Women often don't realize they're in perimenopause for a while anyway, because you can start to have changes like some of what you're talking about are common. Changes in hair and hair falling out is common. Libido changes is common. Anxiety is a really common one. These things can start happening before, and brain fog, you said, these things can start happening before your periods actually start to change. So you could still be having a regular menstrual cycle, and some of these things will start to change. And it's usually in hindsight, you know, if you ask a woman who's been in perimenopause for a while or in menopause, like, what was the first thing that showed up? They'll say things like what you're saying, or anxiety is a really common one because of the way that the nervous system is impacted. So that is a really big one, is the brain. It's important to understand that a lot of what is happening ultimately is changes in your nervous system during this whole time. The brain ultimately ends up undergoing a restructuring. It's kind of evolution's way of sort of getting rid of neural connections that evolutionarily you might need during kind of reproductive years, and replacing those with new neural connections that will serve you differently in the next phase of your life. And you can imagine your brain is undergoing a restructuring and a reorganizing for some years, right? Because this process takes years for your body to transition through. You can imagine that there might be some brain fog, right? For example, in there. And so nervous system changes are really important to understand. And so depression and anxiety and just mood swings, that all of those things can come with it. Some other big changes will be, so your HPA axis, which is your brain adrenal connection. People might think of it as your adrenal glands, but it's really the brain and adrenal connection. And that's related to cortisol, largely. That system is one of your primary ways that your body responds to stress, and kind of is one of the key systems that says, do you have resiliency to stress, whether it's physical stress or mental, emotional stress? And that can really easily get imbalanced during this time as well. So it's a really important kind of foundational thing that women start to undergo, start to do reflection on. How am I managing my stress? What are the things in my life that are no longer serving me, that are I need to get rid of, or that I need to modify, whether that's relationships or work or whatever, but also how do I regulate my nervous system? How do I keep myself in a grounded, centered state, right? And bringing in practices that do that for you, whether that's mindful meditation, whether that's yoga. And then there's also really amazing supplementation. So one of the foundational things that I tell women to do is take adaptogenic herbs. These are herbs, or just adaptogens is what they're often called. So these are things like ashwagandha, shisandra berry, different types of ginsengs, okay, and rhodiola and some others. These herbs are really amazing because their name is adaptogen. That's what they help your body do. Your body and your mind, they help you adapt. By definition, they don't do one thing. They help your body to be more resilient to stress, whether physical, mental, emotional. They help balance your immune system and metabolism, and this brain cortisol adrenal connection. So those are a really foundational herbal approach that I tell women to take. And another thing that is happening during this time, since you're asking about what else happens, inflammation tends to go up. The way that estrogen impacts your immune system is that when it starts to go down, your immune system tends to increase signals of inflammation, and inflammation will cause so many of the symptoms that you could be experiencing right now that you were saying, or all the way through menopause. And you have to consider, you know, women will maybe think like, oh, I've got brain fog and fatigue, let's say, and that's just menopause. Oh, okay. But inflammation or leaky gut, as you said, which also causes inflammation, those things cause fatigue and brain fog, among other symptoms. So is it really menopause and the hormones changing, or is it that you need to bring your inflammation levels down? So that's kind of those are some of the main areas. And that's kind of what I try to, educate women on, is that, there's a lot to consider, and just balancing your inflammation levels, paying attention to your gut health and your stress management can go a long way and reduce a lot of symptoms.
Thank you. I asked my mother about whether she took anything for her menopausal symptoms, and she said, "What symptoms?" You know, but really, what I have noticed about her is that from the age of around 40, she became very snappy. She used to be like a very sweet, very, well, she's still very supportive, but I'm saying like she used to be very sweet, very calm, very like very lovey-lovey, you know, very lovey-dovey kind of person. Mm-hmm. And now she's like this general, you know, like if I don't do what she says, she's like, you know, get back in line kind of thing, you know. Not, she doesn't say like that, but I'm just saying like she's very, very snappy. And I'm wondering whether, you know, being snappy and, you know, having like a very short temper, and are there any other symptoms that you've noticed that are directly correlated with menopause? Like a lot of women talk about hot flashes and so on, and I'm wondering about, you know, as a perimenopausal woman, should I be expecting that I will be getting all of these different symptoms, or is it a case that if you start supporting your system, your body, with all of these different techniques that you mentioned, you can actually prevent them before they even occur, including the mental health and the, you know, becoming snappy and all the other like hormonal changes that will lead to you reacting in a certain way?
Yeah. So there's a couple of questions I'm hearing in what you're saying. So one is, will you get all these symptoms, or why is it that maybe your mom didn't have really any symptoms that she noticed anyway, and you're having symptoms? So I actually just did a social media post about this. I think it was yesterday or something. So there's a couple of things there. One is it's about individuality. We all come into the world with different susceptibilities in our mind and body, right? So you can, one way you could think of that is just in general. It's like throughout your life, when you get sick, how do you get sick? It's probably similar, right? Most of the time it's like, I get like a sinus infection, but some people it's like that's not their susceptibility. Every time they get sick, they like get a cough and it starts to go to their chest right away, right? And they get like bronchitis easy and stuff like that. So that kind of example of like susceptibility, it's like we all have that in different ways. So it's like maybe one woman has a susceptibility to like in the emotional sphere, like to anxiety or worry and that sort of thing. So when, I mean, her whole life, maybe when she gets stressed or she's feeling overwhelmed, like that is one of the things that starts to happen, right? Could be that that same sort of thing starts to come up during perimenopause. It might be that somebody else, when they're sort of stressed and overwhelmed in life, they get digestive system symptoms, right? They start to get, you know, they get loose stools and indigestion and all kinds of different things, right? And those might be some, that means that their digestive system is like a susceptible part of their body. So you can sort of think of this in that way, and that really the menopausal transition is essentially a stressor to your body. So if you think about it in that way, if there's a stressor, what your body has to do is adapt, and your mind has to adapt to the to those changes as well, mentally and emotionally. So what you need to, so that means that you may not have all the same symptoms as someone else. And also, if someone is more resilient and able to adapt to stressors, and when I say that, it's a broad term, it could be physical, mental, emotional, but how resilient you are relates to how many symptoms you have and how intense those symptoms are. The more easily your body can adapt to the changes, the less symptoms you'll have and the less intense they'll be. And that's true, not just of menopause, it's true of the human condition and like, you know, getting an infection, illness or something like that. So that's kind of one of the things, like you can kind of predict maybe how you'll respond by how your body has responded in the past. And genetics definitely plays a role in it too. We all come into the world with different genetics. And so a woman with a different genetic makeup is going to have potentially different menopausal symptoms than someone else. You asked another question. That was the first one I wanted to.
So I was saying that sometimes there's, you know, people that don't have that many symptoms, but really they have. Like, for example, in the case of my mother, she thinks she doesn't have any symptoms, but she does. And her symptoms is she became snappy, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other question was about, you know, should, like, do people, can I take something to prevent getting, you know?
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess, like, you know, I don't obviously know anything about your mother, but it potentially is like a self-awareness piece, you know, maybe she's just not self-aware that that piece changed. And maybe that is like one of the primary things that changed for her. So that could be there. But I think what I was just speaking to is kind of about resiliency is kind of the answer to your question. It's how do you prevent those things? You make sure that your body is as healthy and resilient as possible. And so like in naturopathic medicine, we have a therapeutic order, and the foundational baseline thing are what we call the determinants of health or the conditions for health. So none of these things are a surprise, but it takes some like honest self-reflection of, okay, how am I eating? How is my diet? Am I taking care of myself in that way? Are there things that I know that I could improve in that realm? And of course, there's like plenty of guidance to be had from nutritionists or, you know, doctors and so forth from that. But that's like a category, right, of like what you're putting into your body. How optimized is that? Is there some work that you could do there? What about movement? This is really, really important that women are moving their body regularly, but especially doing resistance training. Like building muscle is really, really important because that's going to help balance your metabolism. It'll decrease inflammation. It'll help blood sugar regulation, and it will help preserve bone density as you get older, which is a major concern as you get into postmenopause. And it will help you age in a healthy way and prevent when you get much older, like frailty and those sorts of things. Building muscle is one of the most important things you can do, and that's a major builder of resiliency in your body's ability to do almost everything. So at least moving regularly, but then I would say starting to build muscle. But you have to just ask yourself honestly, like, am I moving my body? It's most of us, you know, any of us can ask ourselves, like, if I could choose one or two things that I know I could do today that would make me healthier, what would they be? We all probably have those things. So I would say, you know, for women listening to this, like, just ask yourself that and be honest. And if one of those things, if something's there, what does it take for you to then put that in place? Just one thing. You don't have to do 10 different things. Just choose one thing and make it non-negotiable. Like, this is the one thing that I know if I do this, I will feel healthier and feel better, and it will be good for me. And you know better than anyone else what you can do for your health in that way, right? So it's really about building foundations of health, and that's going to be your best protection against intense symptoms through this time. Not that you can avoid everything. It also is just what it is, and comes with a lot of symptoms. Sometimes it's really rough for women, and some women's just like, yeah, blip on the radar. So it's individual in that way. But yeah, that's what I would say is, like, don't make it too complicated. Just really focus on the things that you know you can do for your health.
Thank you. I'm 44 now, and I feel like I've never looked better. I feel like I'm... like, I really feel like the most awesome I've ever felt in my life right now. And of course, I would like that to stay this way. And I'm wondering, what are the best hacks for a perimenopausal or menopausal woman to look and feel young forever? For example, like, I've noticed my mom was, in the last few years, she was always like juicing ginger and lemon and turmeric and taking chia seeds and so many different things that she was doing. And I'm wondering whether you feel that kind of approach helps most women. Like, are there any particular protocols that you can say most perimenopausal and menopausal women can take and they will benefit regardless?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of them, the first one I'll say is what I already said, moving your body and starting to consider, putting in some sort of resistance training routine that will help you feel amazing in your body and will help you to continue to look young as you age, and healthy as your age. Is going to help your skin. It's going to help everything. So that's really important. And it helps your body detoxify, because that's one of the main ways your body moves lymph through. It moves blood in circulation, but lymph system is how your body gets toxins out of the bloodstream and ultimately out of your body. So that moving your muscles, and even walking, right? Just the muscles moving is how the lymph moves. So that's really important. I would say from a dietary perspective, you know, antioxidants are one of the most important things. So, you know, if you're eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, you're probably getting a lot of antioxidants. But I will tell people a lot of times, you know, as a sort of food as medicine thing, eat a cup of blueberries a day. A cup of blueberries will actually increase your body's own antioxidant systems. And so it's sort of like stimulating your body. It's not the antioxidants in the blueberries that you're actually going for. It's this impact that they have on your body where it will increase your body's own wisdom, basically your own antioxidant capabilities. So that is like one simple thing that I tell people to do, and just be plant forward with your diet, including like protein. Consider how can you start to increase plant proteins in your diet, such as legumes, lentils, and beans, because there's a lot of there's phytoestrogen impacts, and there's also fiber and antioxidant impacts of those things. So just ways to increase plants in your diet. The other thing I would say is sweating. So that's kind of in the realm of movement, but it could also be from sauna and stuff. Any way that you can help your body to just continually naturally detoxify. We always have to detoxify, whether it's something coming from the outside or it's from our own body. Our own body makes toxins that we have to get rid of. So I oftentimes tell women to, you know, sweating from movement is amazing, but also if that is something that's hard to do consistently, a few times a week, sit in a sauna and sweat for 10 to 20 minutes, because that's a primary way that you can sweat heavy metals out. You can sweat all kind, you know, pesticides out and all kinds of different things. So that's taking a big brunt of toxic burden off of your body, like that your liver doesn't now have to do. And as you, if you keep those detox pathways open and you're continually getting antioxidants in, you're going to feel really good and you're going to look really good as you age. It's kind of that simple. A lot of times it just takes like framing it, I think, in that way.
Thank you. What kind of hacks can perimenopausal and menopausal women do to sleep better? Because I think I read somewhere that some people struggle to sleep, and when they do, that kind of impacts their entire body and their productivity and their stress levels and so much more.
Yeah, sleep's a really common one. First, make sure that there's, well, yeah, I guess I would say like make sure that there's not a sort of a sleep disorder going on, like unrelated to menopause or something. Like say you have sleep apnea, that's really important to make sure that that's not going on. And you get that diagnosed if it is, and treated separate, because that's a separate thing, but those are not uncommon. So, you know, I always say like, make sure that there's not a sort of diagnosis like that going on. But if it's just like run of the mill sleep disturbance, a few things that can help. So, magnesium is, a mineral that's really important during the menopausal transition and beyond for balancing your antioxidant and immune system and for bone health. And it also has a calming impact on the brain. So there, your brain kind of has two sides. It's got an excitatory side and a calming side. And the magnesium helps the calming side to be active, more active. And so there's different forms of magnesium. What I typically recommend is magnesium glycinate. You'll see magnesium, it'll be magnesium citrate or oxide, all kinds of different things that can be attached to. But magnesium glycinate is a really good choice, and taking it an hour or two before bed, because when it gets in your body, you've got this magnesium and this glycine, which is an amino acid, and they separate and get absorbed into your body separately. So you've got the magnesium that's doing this calming thing to your brain, but glycine, the thing it's attached to, is also a calming neurotransmitter in your central nervous system. So it's a really nice, and it's really well absorbed. So that's a really good option, and most women would do well to take that during menopause and perimenopause. The other thing that I always do is adaptogenic herbs, because of the balance that they have on the cortisol system. Your cortisol is supposed to spike in the morning. This is a primary stress hormone. It's supposed to spike in the morning, and that's what wakes you up. It's called the cortisol awakening response in the first like 30 minutes. And then after about an hour after waking up, it's supposed to kind of just taper down, and basically just tapers down throughout the day. There's a pattern over 24 hours to it, and it goes down, down, down until at night it's lowest and you should be sleeping. But if that gets dysregulated, which I was already saying earlier, like it can get dysregulated, that creates a lot of sleep issues. It can create the sort of tired and wired sensation. It can create like, I'm tired during the day, but I can't fall asleep at night, and different things. Like, it can get, that pattern can get messed up. So adaptogens work really well for that. So I'll tell women to do usually a combination of adaptogenic herbs, late morning, maybe early afternoon, about the same time every day, consistently taking them. They're one of the best things that you can do to help manage sleep. There are other things. Sometimes melatonin is helpful. I haven't ever found melatonin to be like a big game changer in my practice, but you know, doing it, a lot of times doing these things together and not just trying to say like, oh, I'm going to try magnesium and see if that works. I'm going to try these herbs and see if that works. Doing things that act more holistically and get it from different angles, doing them together, is a better approach. So those are a few of the things. And then also just like sleep hygiene is really important. So what are you doing in the last 30 minutes to an hour before bed? Are you doing something that stimulates your nervous system or calms it down? What's your bedroom like? Is it, what's the temperature like? It should be cool, and sleep in a cool room if you can. Do you work in your bedroom? Like, what else do you do in your bedroom? You should really just sleep in your bedroom most of the time. It should be a sanctuary for rest, basically. So getting in the mindset of, you know, I know if I work in my bedroom, there's a weird thing that happens where it's like, I don't know, it's like a weird mental thing of like, oh, I work here and I sleep here, and it's like in the same room. It's helpful sometimes to have them separated. So just sleep hygiene can be really important. Avoiding screens before bed, like do something calming, read, drink a cup of tea, get in a ritual, and a ritual will eventually tell your brain, oh, it's bedtime, I'm going to sleep soon.
Thank you. I remember when I was younger, my grandma used to have hot flashes, and I'm a speaker at multiple events around the world. And I think if I started having like hot flashes in the middle of a conference and there would be like, you know, steam coming out of my head like a kettle, I think I would scare quite a lot of people. And I'm wondering, what can I do to prevent this? And I mean, I've never seen my mom having hot flashes, but I do know she has hot, high blood pressure, and she gets very irritable when she has that. So are there any like supplementation or any other techniques that you have to prevent getting hot flashes or to combat them for those women that have it?
Yeah, absolutely. So magnesium can be helpful for hot flashes. So just to plug that one, but so I have an herbal formula called PhytoAdapt that is really aimed at multiple symptoms of perimenopause and menopause, hot flashes being a big one. So the adaptogenic herbs can help. Shisandra berry is one that may help. But that in combination, so my formula has some of those herbs in combination with phytoestrogens. So phyto means plant. So these are, so you can think of it like plant estrogens. So these are compounds in different plants that chemically look really similar to your natural estrogen. Close enough that, so in your body, the way that your estrogen is able to work and do things is that in tissues all over your body, there's receptors. So there's like a little dock, and the estrogen comes in and it docks in there, and then it sort of sends signals and does all the things that estrogen will do in that cell. Well, these phytoestrogens look similar enough that they can come in and dock in that place too. The difference is they're not near as potent as your estrogen, because your estrogen is sort of perfect, right? A perfect fit. These are a close enough fit that they will go in there and they will stimulate the receptor. So you can kind of think of a lot of the changes related to estrogen that are happening during this time as kind of like estrogen withdrawal. Your body is like, had this really potent signal present, and now it's, as it's declining, your the tissues are like, whoa, what do I do now? I don't have that signal. And so everything starts to kind of get dysregulated like this, until eventually at some point in postmenopause, it will calm down. Your body sort of regulates and comes to a new steady state. But during that time, phytoestrogens can be really helpful, because they will be a little bit like a band-aid on the estrogen receptors and give a little bit of a weak signal, estrogen signal, and they can really help hot flashes. So the two, so you can get phytoestrogens in food, tofu and soy, not just tofu, soy is the most commonly known one, and it's pretty potent. Tofu is the easiest way to get it, but also other legumes have phytoestrogens, so I tell them to eat those regularly. But there's herbs that have these, and so that's what I use in my PhytoAdapt formula. And I use one called Rapontic Rhubarb, and then another one that's it's hops, like hops that's in beer and things. It's got one of the most potent phytoestrogens in it. So I use those. And then another thing in there that women can do, and sometimes this herb works just on its own for hot flashes, if that's a primary thing, is black cohosh. Or it's called Actea racemosa or black cohosh. So sometimes that herb works well for hot flashes also.
Thank you. Tell us what else is important for menopausal women to know about their lifestyle that would help them to equilibrate, for example, because I've heard about the hormone replacement therapy. I don't even know what that means, and will that help them to kind of equilibrate their how they feel?
Yeah. Hormone replacement therapy is a really important consideration for a lot of women. It's literally what it sounds like. It's replacing hormones that are declining or absent, or however you want to think about that. It's typically an estrogen. You can get estrogen in different ways. You can take it orally, but a lot of times now there can be some other issues with taking it orally that you can avoid if you use transdermal estrogen. So you can put a patch on and it's absorbed through your skin. And then along with progesterone, like a bioidentical, so a progesterone and estrogen that are the same exact same chemical structure as what yours would be. That of course can help a lot of symptoms. Hormone replacement therapy, it's not right for everyone, but for those who it is a good choice for, it can help a lot of symptoms, and it can help decrease some long-term health risks. It can help protect bones. You're not going to take it for the rest of your life. You might take it for, 5 years or something like that. It helps to bridge the gap a little bit, right? Is one of the ways that I think about, what I try to do with natural medicine. And what I try to do if a woman's taking hormone replacement therapy, using natural medicine to help fill in the gaps that hormone replacement therapy is not helping with. Some women will, it's a spectrum because everybody's individual, right? So some women can take hormone replacement therapy and it's like game changer. It's like, oh my God, I feel like myself again. And they love it and they're great and they don't need to do anything else. Some women will take it and they don't do well with it and they don't feel good. Some women will take it and they're like, yeah, that really helped my hot flashes and my night sweats are a little less, but I'm still really tired. I still have this brain fog, etc. And the reason that example is important is because it illustrates it's not just about your hormones, right? That's all everyone talks about, but if that was all that was going on, everyone could just do hormone replacement therapy and we wouldn't have to even have this conversation. So it's that kind of situation where, I mean, I'm all for hormone replacement therapy for many women, but it's not necessarily like the solution that every woman thinks it is. And so it can be super important and helpful, but there's a lot of other pieces that we want to address. Like we want to balance inflammation, right? And we want to help blood sugar regulation that easily starts to get imbalanced during this time, and digestive health and all the other things that I was mentioning. So yeah, it's really important, but it's not like the silver bullet that people sometimes think.
Thank you. Why do some older women tend to look a lot more masculine and they tend to have like voice changes? What happened there? And why do, for example, celebrity women look so glamorous and so young? And like, what are they doing to look so amazing and so young at, I don't know, 50, 60 and plus? What kind of things do those kind of celebrities put in place that we can also model to look and feel young
forever? I don't know if I can speak to that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, people do a lot of plastic surgery and stuff. So I don't know that they're doing anything special with their diet and lifestyle that no one else is doing. Everyone's going to age differently. Everyone's body is going to change in its own way. And I think it's more important to put the focus on how do you feel in your body and how do you feel in your mind and emotionally, are you regulated and balanced? And avoid the comparison too much with other people, because you have no idea. Maybe they have amazing genetics. Maybe they've done plastic surgery. You don't know what they're doing. So I would say put the focus internally on yourself. Like, if you feel good in your body and you're happy, that should be the most important focus, I think.
Thank you. But why do older women, some of them, look a lot more masculine and they have perhaps like a different, like a voice change? What happened there? Is it something related to hormones?
Yeah, it could be that there's, relative to estrogen, there's more testosterone now than there was relative to estrogen, because the ovaries are really kind of running the hormone, the testosterone, progesterone, estrogen show during reproductive years. And as estrogen, as the ovarian function declines, all of those hormones can tend to decline. But your body can still make, it still makes some estrogen and progesterone. It's not like they're absent, but they're quite low. And testosterone can still be made easily in your adrenal glands. So there could be a relative, like a balance, if you think about it that way. It's like now, you know, estrogen and testosterone were like this, and now it's like this. So relative to one another, testosterone is more. So that might, you know, that might explain some of that, and can be like changes in like getting facial hair in different places, right? Some women will get like, it can get acne and things, body odor changes during the menopausal transition. So yeah, there's a lot of physical changes that can happen, and they definitely are often related to the hormonal changes.
How would a menopausal woman discover whether hormone replacement therapy is a good idea for them? Like, how would someone prevent getting issues beforehand? Like, how would they know that they might get it?
I'm not sure I'm understanding, like, might get symptoms from perimenopause, you mean?
Yeah, like, let's say if I don't want to have, let's say, hot flashes and, you know, become masculine and all these different issues that could occur.
Yeah.
How do I prevent all of that?
Yeah, I mean, hormone replacement therapy is probably a conversation that every woman should have with their doctor at some point in the menopausal transition. Sometimes hormones can be used during perimenopause, or, you know, towards the late stages of perimenopause, right before menopause actually happens. Just so everyone knows too, the definition of this, because I'm using them both, is menopause is diagnosed when you've gone 12 months without a period. So just to say that, like, you know, the perimenopausal transition can be many years into menopause. You could go 10 months without having a menstrual cycle and having a period. And then you might have another one, and you're not technically in menopause yet, but you're really close to the end of it, right? So just so that definition's clear. So yes, somewhere in there, hormone replacement therapy is a good conversation to have with your provider. And yes, some of those more masculinizing sort of changes that you're talking about may be changed by doing hormone replacement therapy, like estrogen and progesterone therapy. Absolutely, it's going to keep, at least for a time, for the years that you're taking it, it's going to keep a lot of the aspects that you're used to as being a woman. It's going to support all of those things that estrogen and progesterone were supporting. So, you know, probably sex drive and vaginal elasticity and moisture, and because that that's a whole area that's changing, right? If women that are listening to this don't know that, that's an important one to know about. There's genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is just basically the vaginal tissues are changing, and there can be atrophy and there can be pain with sex, and like a lot of those things are, it's really important to know that that can happen. And if that is happening and it's impacting you personally or your relationship, there are solutions for that, and actually amazing ones, like topical vaginal estrogen. It's amazing for that. So it's important. Not women don't always know what to expect, and so that's a really important thing to know. But also, you know, yeah, it's going to help you. You know, it's going to help your body sort of maintain what you would consider like feminine traits, most likely more longer. during the transitional time.
Thank you. What are the best gadgets that you recommend for perimenopausal and menopausal women to leverage to feel young and feel healthy for longer?
Gadgets. I wasn't ready for that question.
I'm talking like, I don't know, red light therapy or any other, I don't know, hyperbaric chamber or any other things that you kind of, you know, for example, I've used a few things because I'm a big fanatic of like, you know, new age, you know, like exciting stuff. So I've used like resonance device for optimizing my sore throat and cough and migraine. And I know it's not related to menopause, but I know that they have different settings for a lot of different conditions. And I think probably there could be a setting in that. The other thing I've used is this retreat center where it was helping my cells to optimize their, you know, the way they were basically, cellular function. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was there for like an entire night. I can't really describe what happened there, but it's, you know, it apparently optimized my cellular function.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, were there any other like gadgets or any other therapies that you recommend in addition to everything you talked about earlier?
I think infrared light therapy is really important, like the infrared sauna. That's a really great investment to make. You can get ones that are not very expensive. I mean, you can get like what you would think of as a traditional one that's like a box room that you step into, but they have ones that are like pretty affordable too, that are like, it's actually a chair that you sit in and you just like zip the thing up and it goes around your neck, and there's really powerful infrared lights in there, and so you get the sweating, but you also get the infrared light has an impact on your mitochondria, which make the energy in your cells, so it helps metabolism and your body to speed up in that way. So I would say that's probably the number one thing that I have recommended over the years, is as kind of a health longevity kind of gadget. Another thing that's, you know, pretty cool is now there's like the Oura Ring and all of these different wearable devices that track your heart rate variability. And this heart rate variability is one of the most important measures of cardiovascular health, but also nervous system health and increasing longevity. So in a nutshell, what heart rate variability is when you breathe in, your heart rate is supposed to increase. And when you breathe out, your heart rate is supposed to decrease. Okay. This happens to different levels. Sometimes you can actually feel your pulse and breathe in and feel it go up and breathe out slow, and you might feel your pulse slow down a little bit. Sometimes you won't notice it. But the difference in that number is the variability in your heart rate. And that is a measure of the balance of your autonomic nervous system, your fight or flight, rest and digest nervous system, because that's what's making it go up and then go down, is that part of your nervous system. So having a read on where that's at and then doing things to increase that, you're basically working out your nervous system to increase this heart rate variability, because the more heart rate variability you have, the lower cardiovascular mortality risk, the lower all-cause mortality risk, much better like stress management and the way that stress impacts you in life. So that's another really important one. And it's great that we have all these devices now that will show you what's my heart rate variability. And they'll also show you right, like your sleep. And they'll show you how you're sleeping. So I think those are amazing. And those are the two things I would probably say.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs and menopausal entrepreneurial women can connect with you.
Yeah, you can email at thebridgesystemmethod.com and if you also or at gmail.com. Thebridgesystemmethod.com is a website, and the supplement that I mentioned is coming out in a couple of weeks. Email me there, and let's say that's the easiest. You can find me on social media at thebridgesystem on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube.
Heal Podcast with Lily Patrasco shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.